As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Whale Hunting, our weekly podcast where Bradley and I look at the hidden worlds of money and power. I'm Tom Wright, and today I have with me Bradley Hope, co-founder of Project Brazen, who has a fantastic new magazine article in Vanity Fair about a very unlikely subject. Bradley, why don't you start by just telling us what your latest article is about?
Well, actually, interestingly, it all began as a small mention in the Whale Hunting newsletter. I think maybe it was early last year, we first heard that Johnny Depp had been spending a lot of time in Saudi Arabia and had gotten close to MBS himself.
This is Johnny Depp, the Hollywood actor?
Yes, that's the one. Johnny Depp, the Hollywood actor.
And MBS, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia?
Yes.
And they're friends?
Yes, exactly. But it's one of those things, you know, these Gulf leaders, they have a kind of very carefully manicured presence publicly. And, you know, within Saudi Arabia, there's no such thing as like an unfiltered interview with MBS. He's always portrayed as this very lofty figure. And then there's these little tiny clips, like there's a clip that's been going around recently where a kid came up to him and said, "I want a Mercedes." And then he says, "Find out the address." And then there's another clip where the Mercedes is delivered to his house. You know, that's the kind of image that he has in Saudi Arabia. So in some funny way, these relationships that he has kind of like more off the record are very revealing about what he's really like.
Well, nobody wanted this story to get out, did they? Basically, you started quite a few months ago now hearing about Johnny Depp's pretty close friendship with MBS, the Crown Prince and ruler, de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia, very powerful figure. And it wasn't out in public, right? And you've been able to sort of get it confirmed from various secret sources. So tell us a little bit about why, you know, like you said, MBS is out there doing some things on social media. Obviously, the kingdom, it's got these huge property developments that it's doing. It's got big sport franchises that it's luring to the kingdom. And it wants to be big in Hollywood films as well, or international films. And Johnny Depp's a part of that. And talk us through how you sort of heard about it and how you were able to uncover it all.
Well, you know, at Project Brazen, we like to wear our research lightly. But this one was a really hard one to crack, because while initially we heard it was true, it took a long time to really get inside the room to get the details of what was going on in that relationship. I think also it's kind of surprising in a way, because if you're Saudi Arabia and you hire McKinsey and say, "I want to build a film and TV business," it would be probably done in a different way than it's actually done in Saudi Arabia, which is a little bit more piecemeal and kind of almost esoteric. Like, building a relationship with Johnny Depp wouldn't be the first 10 things on your list. So it's sort of interesting because it reveals something about MBS, his kind of taste, his desire to meet people that perhaps he watched on TV when he was a kid, you know, because he's under 40. And probably when he was younger, Johnny Depp was one of the biggest celebrities in the world, you know. So it took a lot of research, a lot of interviews with people, and sort of the leveraging of those pieces of information to get other pieces of information. I think that's kind of the classic Brazen way.
So tell me, what does MBS want from Johnny Depp?
Saudi Arabia and MBS want it to become a center of the entertainment world. So they're trying to develop their economy away from oil in every possible way. And entertainment's kind of a core part of that, because unlike the other Gulf countries, Saudi Arabia has a big population. It's over 30 million people. Other countries like the UAE have an actual population of local people of just over like a million. Same thing in other places like Qatar, Kuwait. And so Saudi Arabia has a real population, which means it could have a real domestic entertainment business. Saudi people are in general wealthier than other people in the world because of the subsidies and the oil income. yet they travel abroad all the time for all of their R&R, their vacations. And until recently, there were no movie theaters in Saudi Arabia. So a big part of what MBS has been doing is trying to attract people to come against the odds, because, you know, people in Hollywood are very allergic to have anything that would hurt their reputation, but at the same time, they're quite attracted to money. So he's playing on that side of it, I guess. So, you know, in Saudi Arabia right now, if you make a movie there, you can get some of the best rebates in the world. A lot of films are filmed in the UK, not because of the setting, but because of the tax credits. And Saudi's tax credits can be as high as 30% of the film's budget. So if you make a $100 million film, you get $30 million back, in theory. So that's very attractive. So that's kind of their more formal approach to how they get people to come film there. And there's been some big films. There was a film from the Russo brothers called Cherry that was filmed there.
But when you said Hollywood stars are allergic to Saudi Arabia, I mean, obviously you're referring to the killing of the activist Khashoggi in 2018.
Yeah, I think if you're a big star, you're very nervous about your reputation all the time. Maybe they don't even know that much about it, but they know that Saudi Arabia has been conflated in the press with being a murderous regime or whatever the terms people use. So that would be a major tick on the con side of engaging. So back in 2018, when Jamal Khashoggi was murdered in the Saudi consulate by agents of the Saudi regime
in Istanbul,
everybody in the world turned their back on Saudi Arabia. Most people did, foreign leaders and business people. But over time, that has really changed a lot. And a big portion of that is that MBS didn't disappear. People thought for a time that he might be pushed out of power by his relatives, because the royal family rules Saudi Arabia, theoretically, not just one person. But MBS proved it's actually just ruled by one person. It's just him. So he managed to stay in power. And not only that, but his power seems to have increased and increased. You know, he's really a major player in all kinds of things and the international stage, because, you know, obviously Saudi Arabia has a very important role in the price of oil, which can influence everything else across the world in economies and in wars. And he's also quite a muscular figure in the region of the Middle East. For example, for a time he was about to normalize with Israel relations, which hadn't happened, you know, for decades. And that was going to be a very big deal for Israel, for the U.S., a major step towards a new kind of world order. And it's all in his hands, you know? So I think over time, people have really changed how they were viewing him. And initially viewing him as probably the reformer gone wrong, who was going to get ousted. Now they see it as he's the reformer who had a kind of violent edge, but who has stayed in power and is going to be in power for a very long time, long past any president we can even imagine in the United States, for example, because there's no term limits for a king of Saudi Arabia. He's not the king yet, but when he becomes the king, he will surely last a long time.
Now, of course, he's very attractive to Hollywood because he can put, you know, Saudi money can back multiple films. It can back $100 million films if they want to. They can open up the country to production. So as you explained, he basically got to know Johnny Depp on a personal level. How did the two of them meet in the first place?
So in the article, you know, we talked to sources who described how this French wheeler dealer called Sina Talib managed to meet this very important prince in Saudi Arabia called Prince Badr, who is a close childhood friend of MBS, and actually it's also his cousin. And Prince Badr kind of burst onto the scene when he was the named person who bought the Salvador Mundi, which costs the royal family of Saudi Arabia more than $450 million, the most expensive painting of all time. And since then, Prince Badr has become the sort of culture minister. And as part of that, he's overseeing the film and TV world. So he, according to the article, he met this guy, Sina, who said, listen, you could try to pay an actor to come, and some of them will come, but that's not a very good relationship to have. What you want to do is be the patron of the arts. You want to fund films, not actors. And so he said, that's something you should be thinking about doing. And then Prince Badr and his team came to the agreement that that was a good idea. And they said, let's find some projects to finance. At one point, they were interested in funding this really buzzy film that's from Francis Ford Coppola called Megalopolis. It's sort of his big life's work film, but it turned out he didn't need any external funding. He's using his own money for the most part. And then on the list, they came to a film called Jean du Barry, which was a kind of an indie French film. And it turned out that they actually did need some money because while they had Johnny Depp and it was already being shot, they were running low on cash and they needed an infusion to kind of raise the level of production. And so they agreed to fund it, give it like a slug of cash in the millions of dollars range. Not the whole budget, of course. It was sort of like an extra amount. And it turned out that Johnny Depp was the lead actor and they wanted to see him and to meet him. And one of the interesting things in the story is that it turned out Johnny Depp didn't want to meet them, even though this money had come, because he hadn't been really party to the agreement to take this investment. And it turns out that he used to be really close with another Saudi prince, a kind of party character called Abdulaziz bin Fahd. So he was the son of King Fahd of Saudi Arabia, well known to kind of traipse around the meatpacking district with a giant Big Gulp cup and sandals on. And, you know, just kind of crazy, typical things you might expect, like kind of like Joe Lo, you know, yachts and champagne and all that kind of thing. And Johnny Depp was along for the ride.
And Johnny Depp was not keen to meet up on the set of Jean du Barry with Prince Badr because probably, I'd imagine, he doesn't want to be connected to Saudi Arabia at that moment, right? He's as aware of anyone of Saudi Arabia's image in the global media, especially the American media, the fact that Khashoggi, who was murdered, according to many reports, at the order of MBS, Crown Prince MBS, you know, Khashoggi had been writing for the Washington Post. The Washington Post has written a lot about his murder. So Johnny Depp would have been aware of that, and that could have fed into why he didn't really want to get close to Prince Badr on the set of Jean du Barry, right?
Well, I think that probably fed into it. But I think, to be honest, what was more important to him was that his friend, this Prince Abdulaziz, had been arrested under this sort of shakedown where MBS had some of his cousins, the top billionaires of the country, government officials, all arrested on corruption charges and held in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, where they removed all the locks from the doors and essentially turned it into a luxury prison. So among the people that was kind of detained during that sweep was this guy, Prince Abdulaziz. So I think that was the thing that actually was his number one turnoff of Saudi Arabia, because he hadn't been able to get in touch with that guy who had been sort of his patron, his party patron.
Sorry, to explain party patron, that's like the fact that these big Hollywood stars often have people who pay for their parties, like Leonardo DiCaprio is often hanging out with Russian billionaires or Joe Lo or whomever.
Yeah, I think in our experience of reporting on A-list actors, very few of them like to pay any bills, no matter how rich they are. So they rely on these kind of ultra-rich people who are willing to do things like charter a 747 or fly them across the world in a Gulfstream private jet. They have money. Like, Leonardo DiCaprio has a lot of money, but he doesn't like to spend it on things like that.
The absolute ultimate person who does this is Swizz Beatz, Alicia Keys' husband. And I love the fact that he has a little cameo in your Vanity Fair piece, because on our reporting on Billion Dollar Whale, he was the guy who really enjoyed this kind of stuff when Joe Lo was paying. I mean, Joe Lo didn't just pay for Swizz Beatz to party. He also paid him lots of hard cash to turn up at MC events, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a pop, right? What's Swizz Beatz's connection to this story?
Well, he is one of the celebrities that has gotten close to Prince Badr. And so Prince Badr has a little coterie of these guys around. So there's been some recent footage and videos of people like Will Smith going over, LeBron James. And obviously, Swizz Beatz is another one of the people that they really like and trust. You know, he's probably just a general kind of cultural advisor. And he's kind of cool, and his wife's Alicia Keys, so he's able to sort of make things happen for them. It's amazing, though, that he has no reflexes. Like, he was probably one of the biggest celebrities in the 1MDB case that never got in trouble, despite the fact that he was hanging out with Joe Lo long after he was on the run, if I recall.
Yeah, for sure. Swizz Beatz attended a party in Bangkok months after it had come out that Joe Lo was the mastermind of the 1MDB scandal and didn't really seem to care. That was always quite astounding to us, along with Nicole Scherzinger and others. All right, so back to Johnny Depp. So Johnny Depp gets over his squeamishness. He's had this history of having friends, Saudi royal friends, who get locked up in the Ritz-Carlton. Suddenly he's back making a film, Jean du Barry, which was his sort of first film after the whole Amber Heard court case, which is very bad publicity for him. Comes back, they launched that at the Cannes Film Festival, if I'm not mistaken. And then his friendship with MBS, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, deepens, doesn't it? Tell us what happens. How do they become real friends, basically?
Yeah, I think when he first comes over to Saudi Arabia, they are kind of testing him and trying to build a rapport. So at first, he doesn't get to meet, obviously, MBS. He's spending time with Prince Badr and others in his circle and going on a kind of whirlwind tour of the country. There's a certain number of stops they like to take people on. There's this place called Al-Ula, which is sort of the cultural center of that Prince Badr has built. They have this giant mirrored performance hall in the middle of this beautiful canyons, a lot of carvings from the Nabataeans, the same people who made what everyone knows from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Petra. So they took him there, they took him to the desert, they took him on planes to show him the developments, and then eventually they said, okay, it's time to meet the Crown Prince. And then he met MBS, which is a pretty rare thing, to be honest, because these days it's very hard to meet him. There's such a long line of people who want to meet MBS. Presidents of countries have a hard time. So that's why it's kind of amazing that Johnny Depp has this special access. And it turns out that they really just hit it off in a big way. And Johnny doesn't have to be anywhere. You know, he's kind of a free agent. And he just sort of started hanging around for weeks at a time. I think we wrote in the article that he spent almost 7 weeks there last year, which is a long time. And a lot of that with MBS, you know, spending time on the yacht, we wrote that he always brings his guitar with him. You know, Johnny Depp's a painter. He gave one of his paintings to MBS. And then this is also kind of culminating in a sort of commercial relationship as well, because they want to reward him for spending so much time in Saudi Arabia, for believing in their renaissance. And so he's been negotiating this big payment, a yearly payment that would basically be like a sort of unofficial cultural ambassador position. And he seems to be spending time there still to this day. You know, really a strong connection has formed.
Right. They traveled together on MBS's personal 747 to go to the Jeff Beck Memorial Concert at the Royal Albert Hall, traversing Saudi by yacht and helicopter, staying at royal palaces, camps. And then Johnny Depp is making this film about the artist Modigliani, which will also star Al Pacino. I think Johnny Depp's directing that film. And that's getting funded by the Saudis, right?
Yeah, it received an investment from the Red Sea Film Foundation, which is Prince Badr's, one of his entities. It's kind of an interesting one because they get a big chunk of cash, as of course, but there's other investors too, so it's not solely funded by Saudi Arabia. And then there's also this kind of internship program where all these young Saudi filmmakers can come and spend time on the set in every department, camera department, hair and makeup, whatever it might be. It's just another sign of how he's trying to make it an exchange to some extent to help Saudi Arabia develop its economy. But, you know, it all kind of raises the question, you know, Johnny Depp played characters like Hunter S. Thompson in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And it just does make you wonder if he's really a bad boy kind of maverick believer in truth and freedom and all that sort of thing anymore. Because I just think in some ways what nobody can really comprehend is the kind of wealth that exists with somebody like MBS. He lives at a level where money is no longer even a thing to think about. There's nothing outside of his reach. You know, even Saudi Arabia, sometimes they will fly an entire restaurant from London or Paris or something to Saudi Arabia, have them set up for a few days just because they want to have a special dinner for a visiting foreign leader. You just can't imagine the kind of excess and luxury that exists. And it seems to me like Johnny Depp, of course, is, for whatever reason, taken with MBS and seems to like him. But also, I think once you get into that world, it's kind of hard to imagine what the effect is on somebody.
Well, I think you and I always discussed why do certain people who the general public will consider to be wealthy do things that look slightly strange for money? You know, the sort of ultimate of that being, why did Miranda Kerr date JoLo, you know, the Australian supermodel? And she was making $7 million a year she met JoLo. But then, you know, the things you just referred to cost a ton of money, don't they? Flying restaurateurs, Michelin-starred restaurateurs over to host pop-up restaurants, putting superstar musicians on boats at Saint-Tropez in the summer. This stuff adds up to, you know, tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. Super yachts themselves that cost $250 million upwards. You know, those kinds of things, just the running costs are astronomical. So that's why the useful billionaires are useful to stars, because, you know, they open doors to certain lifestyles.
Yeah, that's true. But also, I mean, people like Johnny Depp they think of themselves as an artist. You know, he's a musician, he's got a band, he paints, he makes these films. A lot of the films he's making are not mega commercial films because he's not really in the running for mega commercial films after the whole Amber Heard trial. But, you know, I think Joe Lo figured this out too, which is actors want to make movies. And if you can help them make movies, they'll be your best friend. If you just pay them to go to a party, then they're just going to think you're kind of like a transactional person who just pays them a little fee to hang out. But if you fund films, that is a really important way to build a rapport with the film world. And this is something we learned as well, is like Leonardo DiCaprio wanted to make The Wolf of Wall Street for a long time, but they couldn't get a studio to pick it up. They thought it was too R-rated, it was too dark, that maybe the American public wouldn't want to watch it after the financial crisis. But they really wanted to make it. And then eventually Joe Lo showed up and said, okay, well, I'll fund the whole thing. And that is a really strong thing for the film world. Everyone's looking for that person who will just fund films that you want to get made, so you can circumvent the sort of studio process.
Now, Joe Lo was that on steroids, right? Because he was coming along and telling Scorsese and DiCaprio, look, we're going to make $400 million worth of movies. MBS isn't doing that, however, right? This is a much more low-key, and these are independent films, as you mentioned. Would Modigliani or Modi, this film about Modigliani, would it have had more trouble getting made, do you think, if it wasn't for the Saudi investment?
I think some of these films could be made, like, you know, European government funding for the arts, that sort of thing, but they wouldn't be made at the level that people want it to be made at. That's the same thing for Jean Dubarry, Modigliani. These would have been films that would have been really kind of cash-strapped, but now because of this influx, they're more doable. I'm not sure what the return on investment is for Saudi Arabia, because nobody I know has watched Jean Dubarry, and I'm not sure Modi will be like a big one on the list of films people watch. But for whatever reason, you know, they're really happy to be building this relationship. Maybe they think this is a stepping stone. When people see that Johnny Depp is getting his films funded, other people will come looking too, you know?
We should say that it's not just Johnny Depp, right? Martin Scorsese declined an invitation to the Red Sea Film Festival last year. But as you write in the piece, many other people did turn up. Baz Luhrmann, the Australian director of Elvis, was there. Sharon Stone, Priyanka Chopra, Shah Rukh Khan, the famous Bollywood star. So, you know, like you said, things are turning for Saudi Arabia, and it's got huge new property developments and infrastructure developments. So those things, you know, those investments are happening now. And it seems like the Khashoggi moment in reality is in the past now, and Saudi Arabia's doors are open and investors are coming in, and that includes the film world.
I mean, nobody will ever forget the Khashoggi case. It will always be mentioned all the time in articles for many years to come. I can't imagine it won't. But investors have stopped worrying about it. Film stars are stopping worrying about it. Sports stars are stopping worrying about it. So it's the power of the influence and the funding ability of Saudi Arabia is just too strong for the world to hold on to its commitment to punish Saudi Arabia for that happening to Khashoggi. You know, also, I have to say, there's a lot of misunderstanding around Saudi Arabia as well, and a lot of like simplifying. You know, I think as somebody who spent a lot of time in the Middle East and loves the region, it does feel like they get tarnished in a way that's not applicable to other countries. It's crazy to me that people can call a regime murderous because they go to war, for example. People would never say that about the Biden administration or something, even if the number of people who die under American military action is way higher than any other countries, you know?
Yeah, but I think it's fair. I think it's fair that the spotlight is kept on Saudi for that, right? You know, it's not as if the U.S. gets a free pass for CIA extraterritorial assassinations that have happened over the years or whatever.
No, I agree. The spotlight should never go away, but it shouldn't be like a Saudi thing, because I think Saudi people often feel like people are not kind to them as a people, as a country, you know? So there's ways of being a bit more specific about it.
Well, I guess we're all going to now have to watch out what happens in the Johnny Depp MBS relationship. I mean, it's out in the open now, which I think, you know, when you were reporting this story, nobody was that keen for it to be publicized, right? So maybe it goes on the back burner a little bit. We don't see them in public too much together, but what's your prognosis?
I think we're going to see a lot more investment in film and TV projects from Saudi Arabia, whether it's through this kind of rebate system or direct investments. I think we'll see a lot more Hollywood actors willing to go there and spend time there. And on the Johnny level, I think we'll see some odd things. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Johnny's band performed in Saudi Arabia, or he was there to open art galleries and just generally be around. I'm not sure that we're going to see anything huge in public other than that kind of thing, but that relationship seems to be very strong. So I don't know, maybe someday we'll see a Johnny Depp documentary about MBS, who knows.
Well, it's fascinating. Congratulations on a really interesting story. If you want to find out more about that, go to Vanity Fair and read Bradley's excellent Johnny Depp and MBS bromance story. And we'll be back next week for more. If you want to stay up to date with all the goings on at Whale Hunting, you can find out more at whalehunting.projectbrazen.com. Whale Hunting is a production of Project Brazen. It's hosted by me, Tom Wright, and Bradley Hope. It's produced by Megan Dean and Claire Urban. At Project Brazen, Mariangel Gonzalez is our project manager. Ryan Ho is the creative director, with additional design from Andrea Claridge.